We are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 13, The Advent of Lord Chaitanya, Text 66 and 67. Before beginning, I should tell the truth that really the only reason why I'm here after coming in from an intercontinental flight last night is due to your illustrious president. And her husband, the illustrious filmmaker. Be that as it may, I'll try to engage in discussing Mahaprabhu's appearance in this world, the celebration of which is soon upon us. We'll read text 66 first. In the house of Advaitacharya, all the Vaishnavas took pleasure in always talking of Krishna, always worshipping Krishna, and always chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Purport. On these principles only does the Krishna conscious movement go on. We have no business other than to talk of Krishna, worship Krishna, and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Text 67. But Sri Advaitacharya Prabhu felt pained to see all the people without Krishna consciousness simply merging in material sense enjoyment. Purport. A bona fide devotee of Lord Krishna is always pained to see the fallen condition of the whole world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, there's no scarcity of anything within this world. The only scarcity is of Krishna consciousness. That is the vision of all pure devotees. Because of this lack of Krishna consciousness in human society, people are suffering terribly, being merged in an ocean of nescience and sense gratification. A devotee onlooker is very much aggrieved to see such a situation in the world. Translation again. But Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu felt pained to see all the people without Krishna consciousness simply merging in material sense enjoyment. Om Ganachimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militangena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This topic of the Supreme Personality of Godhead feeling pain is very interesting. As you know, of course, Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu is an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Swami Bhagavan. He's an intimate limb of Mahavishnu. He carries out a particular function in the cosmic manifestation. Whenever the Lord appears, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, he sends his predecessors. So in Gaur Lila, that means sending Madhavendra Puri, Ishwar Puri, Advaita Acharya, who appeared about roughly 60 years before Mahaprabhu. And, of course, Jagannath Mishra, Shachimata. When you think of Navadvip at the time of the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you may wonder, what was the problem? It was the seat of everything. It was the capital of everything Vedic, except the conclusion of the Vedas. But it was the center of logic. It was the center of like astrology, all kinds of Vedic learning, but the conclusion of the Vedas was completely missing. As you know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vedaishta sarvaya ahameva veja. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I'm the compiler of the Vedas. I'm the conclusion of the Vedas. So this is why Advaitacharya was so pained, as one of the elders in the area, as one of the elder sadhus. He saw that they've missed the point completely in spite of all their Vedic finesse and Vedic intricacies. What was his famous statement earlier in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita? Keho pape, keho punye, kore vishay bhog. Bhakti gandanahe jate. I don't see a trace of bhakti. Everywhere someone's engaged in papa, sinful activities. Everywhere someone is engaged in punya, pious activities. But no bhakti. Therefore, how can there be any relief from bhava-rog, the real problem of human existence, repeated birth and death? We often say like that, oh yes, birth, death, disease, old age, repeated birth and death. But how much does that reality really impact us? We may begin first by trying to grasp Srila Prabhupada's depth of compassion. For him, these four things are extraordinary impediments. Therefore, he could, with full compassion and certainly full knowledge, say that how can there be any human progress as long as these four things are swallowing everyone? As you know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the intelligent person sees the fault. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. The intelligent person has darshan, can see the dosha, the fault, and does something about it. But our situation in society today is a classic one of doing everything except thinking about what are the real issues in life. And without understanding how we should be grappling with these basic issues, how can we feel compassion, first of all, for ourselves and then for others? We will easily think, people are doing all right, it's not so bad. Economic growth is there. Oh, a pandemic hits, you know, from time to time, coronavirus, whatever. We'll move on. Climate change, seems to be a problem, but they'll figure something out. Nuclear weapons, the world spends trillions of dollars on a nuclear arsenal, but it'll never be used. So in this way, we lull ourselves into a false sense of complacency. But we don't feel that. What we do feel is the urgency of Rajaguna. I've got to. Why? Because I've got to. Often I mimic one very immortalized, although he's dead, singer, who, rhythm and blues singer, whenever he would get worked up at concerts, whether in the USA or UK, he would just grab the microphone and say, I got to. This is Rajaguna. We feel that urgency. It surcharges our physiology. That false urgency surcharges our psychology. And so we feel very practical and expert in carrying out temporary goals, feeling temporary desires. We think, oh, my life is complete. There are some existential issues that I haven't figured out, but who has figured it out anyway? And be brave. Face the fact that there's no one truth. Why do you Vaishnavas feel the need to resolve all the complex issues of life into one package? Be brave and face the reality that there are numerous truths, infinite aspects of those numerous truths. But while people are talking like that, they're doing the same basic thing, just surrendering to the urges of their body and mind. So to understand the pain that Krishna's representatives feel, the pain that Krishna himself feels, the pain that Advaita Acharya feels, we've got to see through the fog that's so blinding us. He'll be all right. Yeah, I mean, there are a few problems, but life will go on. So what are we seeing out there? Because everyone is motivated by a vision. You have a vision in your mind's eye. What are you seeing? You're seeing possibilities. Even in your difficulties of the present moment, you see possibilities. Fulfillment is out there. Happiness is out there, at least to some degree. We're convinced of that. Everyone else is getting it. They're getting their share. Surely my share is waiting for me. My ship will come in. Can you understand? Can you grasp that underlying motivation? I've got to go on. I've got to move on. There are things waiting to happen to me in spite of my loneliness, in spite of my depression, in spite of my dissatisfaction. There's something waiting for me. And if you don't think like that materially, what's your option? Suicide. Since you're not committing suicide, then in material consciousness, you have hope. And what does Krishna explain in Bhagavad Gita? Asha pasha shatar bhaja. Bound by a network of false hopes. So in order to grasp the compassion of the pure devotee of the Lord, in order to grasp the compassion of the Lord himself, we can't be afflicted by our being stymied by this lethargy in the name of human progress, in the name of economic growth. We're trapped. Even from the material point of view, you can see that. But then again, you can't. How we're caught between, on the one hand, the nuclear threat. On the other hand, the climate change threat. And then in between, all kinds of psychological ailments, physical ailments, diseases assaulting. But still we feel that there's a possibility for material happiness. And that possibility drives us onward. So to be a bhakti yogi means to develop real intelligence, to not be afraid to look at the stark reality that material indulgence will not satisfy me. This is scary. Now, it's one thing to believe in God. Of course, we all believe in Krishna, right? That so-called belief is the easy part. But to fully swallow Krishna tattva means that you can see how the illusory energy compares to the spiritual energy. You clearly see what is inferior and what is superior. Reminds you of a statement Srila Prabhupada makes in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that anyone who actually understands Rasa Lila will abhor material gratification. So when we have to ask ourselves, well, do I really understand it? I believe in Krishna. But is belief in the all spiritual name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna, can that coexist with our attachment for pursuing material satisfaction? If we actually understand who Krishna is, if we actually understand Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, we can't engage in the material energy. We can't take shelter of the material energy. Of course, Mahaprabhu himself sets the highest standard. He's demonstrating what is Mahabhava. He said, if you see tears in my eyes while I'm chanting Hare Krishna, you should know it's just a show. Why? Because if I actually loved Krishna, I would have died long ago from separation. The proof that I'm still living shows I have no love for Krishna. So he's demonstrating what is the highest standard. Without understanding what the spiritual energy offers us, how can we feel compassion for those trapped in the illusory energy? In today's purport, we read, a devotee onlooker is very much aggrieved to see such a situation in the world. Do you really feel that? Very much aggrieved to see the situation in the world? Because of this lack of Krishna consciousness in human society, people are suffering terribly, being merged in an ocean of nescience and sense gratification. We might say, well, we wouldn't mind a few dips in the ocean of sense gratification. Keeps the system balanced, you know. But suffering terribly, being merged in an ocean of nescience and sense gratification? Maybe this is just kind of fanatical Hare Krishna talk, you know. Can't be that bad. I mean, really. What do you think? Do we have to take it to such an extreme? How will people ever be attracted hearing statements like this? Wouldn't it be much better if the Shastra, if the sadhus, if Krishna himself would give hope for material satisfaction while believing in Krishna? Wouldn't that work better? As long as we think like that, we can't understand how Sri Advaita Acharya felt pain. What is the composition of that pain that Advaita Acharya would feel? It's certainly not material. Deeper in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you hear about relieving Mahaprabhu of his anxiety. His anxiety in seeing the suffering of parts and parcels who've forgotten Krishna. So the genuine devotee wants to relieve the Lord of his anxiety. So what's the composition of that anxiety? Certainly isn't material. Material anxiety is becoming more and more an omnipresent reality today. Every few years, psychologists coin a new term for a new anxiety. The latest one, officially recognized, is echo anxiety. People feel this creeping, ever-escalating fear that, oh, the whole environmental situation's out of our control and there's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing anyone can really do about it to stop it. Oh, no. And the kids feel this more than anyone. You know their slogan to the adults. You will die of old age, but we will die of climate change. This is echo anxiety amidst so many other anxieties. So how is it that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu feels anxiety? What's the makeup of that anxiety? You can look at Krishna Leela at Mother Yashoda. We were speaking about this in Mayapur a few days ago. How in one of Srila Prabhupada's specially enriched translations, he says that Mother Yashoda was feeling transcendental equipoise in the bliss of material anxiety. Figure that one out. Transcendentally equipoise in the bliss of material anxiety. Why was her anxiety there? Because she's always worried. Krishna and Balaram are crawling on the ground. There's all kinds of tools on the ground and animals with claws and there's this, there's that. Anything could happen while they're crawling on the ground. So they kept her in constant anxiety. But her anxiety is not composed of anything material. in Krishna Lila. Everyone's existence is truth. Their knowledge is truth. And their happiness is truth. But just to give you insight into how in the spiritual world there's anxiety, but it's Satchitananda. To give you insight into that, Srila Prabhupada coined that phrase. She's transcendentally equipoised in the bliss of material anxiety. How can you be transcendentally equipoised on the one hand? On the other hand, there's the material anxiety, and then you say it's bliss. He's trying to get you to understand, trying to get us to understand that sadness, bliss, pain, this, that, it's all Satchitananda on the spiritual plane. This is what it means, Advaya again, non-duality. That whether it's so-called pleasure or so-called pain, in the spiritual world, everything has the same blissful Krishna conscious result. So, therefore, the Brijbasis are actually relishing pain of separation. So much so that that absorption in the pain of separation, Varaha Bhava, is more, brings about Krishna's presence more than when they're meeting with Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself wanted to find out, what is this love and separation? As Krishna, he's wondering, what is this that my devotees are experiencing? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains this phenomenon very nicely. He says that it is not, as you know, that Mahaprabhu is actually an avatar. We loosely say that, golden avatar, Karuna avatar. But he eternally exists as Swayam Bhagavan, just as Krishna eternally exists as Swayam Bhagavan. A little difficult perhaps to understand. Mahaprabhu has his section in the topmost part of the spiritual world. Krishna has his section. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that some devotees are exclusively attracted to Krishna Lila. They go to Krishna's part of Goloka Vrindavan. Some are exclusively attached to Gaur Lila. They go to Lord Chaitanya's part of Goloka Vrindavan. And some devotees are attracted to both. So they double time. So what is this about Mahaprabhu and Krishna? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to be the supreme enjoyer, he comes as Krishna. And when Krishna wants to taste love of himself and separation, he comes as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you're dealing with the same Swayam Bhagavan. One is not the incarnation of the other. These are the realities of the spiritual world, just as non-duality is the reality. Non-duality doesn't mean no varieties. Non-duality means there are varieties, but they all have the blissful effect. They all have the effect of Satchitananda. You can see that non-material, non-duality in the very appearance of the Panchatattva. The impersonal say everything is one. And what does Krishna say? Okay, I'll come as five. So here you are, trying to understand. Well, there's the form of the devotee, the incarnation of the devotee, the pure devotee, the devotional energy. You're trying to understand all this transcendental variegatedness. So Mother Yashoda was in the bliss of anxiety. What's going to happen to Krishna and Balaram? What are they going to do now? What mischief are they up to? And Advaitacharya is feeling pain. But that pain, of course, is not material. It's something that only an intimate devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can understand, this non-material pain. Because often people ask, even devotees ask, well, if he's God, how can he feel pain? I mean, he's got everything. He's got it all together. He's self-satisfied. Atmarama, how can he feel pain? Okay, it's the conditioned souls, yes. They've got a lot of problems. But why should God feel pain? Maybe you've asked yourself that same question. It's actually a spiritually exquisite kind of bhava or emotional state. There's no question of anything material about Krishna, his incarnations, and his pure devotees. What about Prahlad Maharaj? Shoche tatova mukache tasa indriyarta maya sukaya baram udvahatova mudan. He first says, I'm not afraid of material existence. I'm always absorbed in the Mahamrita, the nectarian ocean of hearing and chanting about Krishna. But I do have a problem. I'm lamenting, shoche tatov, umukache tasindriyata. I'm lamenting for the conditioned souls who are unnecessarily laboring under a false burden. Now just think, it's bad enough to struggle under a real burden. But to spend lifetime after lifetime struggling under a false burden, that's the epitome of madness. The burden's totally unnecessary, but still you're struggling under it. So Prahlad Maharaj says, I'm not afraid of material existence. For me, everything is fine as long as I'm hearing and chanting about Krishna. But I'm lamenting, I'm feeling the problems that the conditioned souls are going through. So to enter into that realm of non-material pain, non-material lamentation, compassion, requires dedication to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we could understand about the pain of Lord Chaitanya. He felt the pain of Advaita Acharya. He felt pained to see all the people without Krishna consciousness simply merged in material sense enjoyment. When we look at the world situation, we see the madness is increasing as people more and more cling to their bodily identification, bodyism, as the solution to all problems. The more you take shelter of your bodily designation, the more things will be all right. Because immediately you get allies, persons who are in your group. You feel fortified that way. All of us, with orange jumpers, we should unite. Wow, okay, anyone here with orange? And those with a different color, oh, they are the enemy. You've got a cause, you've got a reason for living. So you see this throughout the world. People are not becoming more universal. How could that have happened when they don't have the basic introductory scientific knowledge of Bhagavad Gita? How can they truly become universal? But we all have that hope, right? A world without borders, a world without sectarianism, right? It can happen as long as the knowledge and experience of how the spirit soul is different from the body is missing. And so you see the nice hopes for universalism, the nice hopes for a world without borders, a world without sectarian fighting. It all vanishes. Although these hopes are nice, because there's no real grounding, no real foundation. And push come to shove, when people feel the pinch of material nature, what do? They take shelter of bodyism even more. So it is a very lamentable situation. And sometimes our devotees wonder, this is becoming so mad. Is it possible people can ever be Krishna conscious? I remember Srila Prabhupada explaining a very interesting thing. How a devotee, a real devotee, sees things. We talked about trying to understand what is spiritual pain, what is spiritual compassion and lamentation. And then there's also this. He explained when a devotee sees people becoming even more sinful and more bewildered, the devotee sees, now we have a bigger opportunity for service. The more sinful the people are, the more the opportunity there is to be recognized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in helping these people come to their senses. You ever think about it like that? Because a Vaishnava is the greatest opportunist. A Vaishnava is always looking for opportunities to increase the service. So therefore, the more people become mad in sense gratification, material bewilderment, the more we see, we can be recognized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by trying to do something about this desperate situation. It's reverse thinking from what we would normally conceive as the best response. We become more enlivened to do something about it because there's more service to be done. And what is a Krishna Bhakta without service? We're not the Belief in Krishna organization, in case you haven't noticed. Of course, if someone says they believe in Krishna, we're happy, but that's not the goal of our life. It's not the goal of their life. We are the devotional service network, the devotional service organization. We want to see how everyone has opportunity to engage in Krishna's service. The more that we keep that necessity in mind, the more we have a chance to get intelligence from Krishna how to deal with the world's current situation. Just as Advaita Acharya looked at his situation surrounding him. Everywhere, people are doing Vedic this, Vedic that. Where is Krishna? Where's the conclusion of the Vedas? Where is devotional service? I don't see a trace. Bhakti Ganda, nahi. I don't see nothing. What time should we end? Okay. Everywhere someone is doing pious activities. Everywhere someone is doing impious activities. Can you say that today? Everywhere someone's doing pious activity. People don't even know what a pious activity is. What, that sounds weird. If you're under 50 years old, can you imagine saying to your associates and friends, have you done any pious activities? It sounds even perverse, doesn't it? Pious activity, get real. Now, if we ask, have you done anything to please yourself today? Oh, now you're talking. Are you happy with your job? Are you happy with your relationship? Oh, these are essential questions. Tato Brahma Jigyasa. This is. Am I happy right now? In my relationship? Am I really happy with this person? How do I feel right now? Right? You constantly check and check and check. What about my job? Do I love my job? Am I following my passions in my career? These are the approved questions of self-realization. The overwhelming nescience may be so intimidating, but we should be more aggressive in a refined way. I remember back in the early days in New York, 72, 73, 74. I think, yes, Vishakha Devi Dasi was there, in and out also at that time. And you can't understand how it was like then, doing book distribution, going out, Harinam. At least 10 times a day, I would meet persons who said, oh, my guru is God, or my guru is an avatar. At the international airport in New York, every day a new god from India would land. You have no idea what it's like. These days you've got, you know, I don't want to mention their names, but they're small time compared to what was going on in the 70s. It was so overwhelming. Every day on book distribution, as I said, you'd meet 10 different persons, each proclaiming, such and such Baba, he is the supreme. Such and such Maharaji, he is the supreme. It was so overwhelming for us. And then Srila Prabhupada came to New York and he said, if you just keep distributing my books, one day all these phonies will go away. This was a real test of faith for us to accept that. You might say, oh yeah, no problem, no problem. Jai Prabhupada. But hindsight is 20/20. But when you're right in the situation, it was a real test of faith. Really? Just distribute books and all these avatars, bogus avatars are going to go away? But it happened. So every particular phase of material existence brings its particular problems, particular impediments. Back in the 70s, there were the bogus avatars. And then there were the deprogrammers. You don't know how fierce that battle was. All right, now you've got the internet. It's like a jungle. And for the next generation, for you all, as you go on with your service and your outreach, it'll be something else. You can be sure. Maya will manufacture something else. As soon as you try to do something for Krishna, there must be resistance. Because that's the nature of the material world. You can't be sentimental. But if you persist, if you push on, you'll become successful. Because this is Krishna's desire. So how determined are we? Here in the UK, besides the fortunate Indian congregation, when you look at the situation in general, you find the worst social statistics in all of Europe. And so that naturally, that could make our outreachers a bit shy, like, ooh, it's really wild out there. But the job must be done. Just think of Srila Prabhupada, what he went through trying to establish ISKCON as he first started in New York. Second Avenue, waiting online to take a shower with the new recruits who didn't know they were new recruits. Drunkards coming in amidst his lecture. Crazed hippies. Why didn't he give up? His godbrothers criticized. Why does he like associating with such low-class persons? But he persisted. One of those original Second Avenue devotees who decades later resurfaced. He couldn't persist in those original Second Avenue days. But now he's Swami Maharaj. He told me he came in to Second Avenue amidst one of Prabhupada's lectures. And first Prabhupada looked at him. He said, so-and-so, have you been taking LSD? Can you imagine anyone, to be honest, not expounding on it? Someone enters in, have you been taking LSD? You're in the middle of the class. And the person said, no. But was he lying? Yes and no. He felt he was telling the truth because he hadn't taken LSD that day. He had taken it the day before and was still feeling the effects. Anyway, 20 years later, he reappeared, and now one of our ISKCON sannyasis. So, can you handle all this stuff? I was talking to one urban outreacher, valiant urban outreacher, lady devotee in the USA, and watched. She's originally from Delhi, but she's trying to cross the bridge and deal with the Wild West, deal with the zoo. So she was, I remember when she first started, she presented to me all these enigmas, these puzzles. Guru Maharaj, I met this nice girl, and I was preaching to her, and she was telling me about her problems with her boyfriend, and I helped her, and everything was fine. And then after 2 weeks, she disappeared. And then a month later, she comes back to me, and she asks, can you help me with my problems with my girlfriend? So she was, the devotee was totally flabbergasted because, you know, with a normal Indian upbringing, you don't have to deal with these kind of things. But if you're in the West, this is normal. So it takes quite some years, some grueling years, to get your head around all this stuff and to have a missionary spirit to help with this crisis of human civilization. I often tell devotees who are from Indian backgrounds, whether contemplating doing Western outreach, I say, now just think what it was like for the Prabhupada's first disciples from America and Europe that he brought to India. You can ask Vishakha Devidas. Did they just immediately, it was like skating on ice for them? Oh, Indian culture. Oh, India, no problem. Yeah, yeah. We understand how to deal with every situation. No, it was a steep learning curve. But now, such devotees, no problem at all going to India. They know how to handle the situation. In fact, some of our senior Vaishnavs, when they go to India, can out-Indian the Indians. But it wasn't always like that in the beginning. It was a steep learning curve. So if it works one way, why can't it work the other way? As Prabhupada himself demonstrated, it was intense. It took some time. So if you can cross the bridge one way, you can also cross the bridge the other way, but it takes perseverance. You can't be sentimental. You have to feel real compassion, or at least be dedicated to developing real compassion. Then we can begin to understand the pain that Sri Advaita Charaprabhu feels. The anxiety that Mahaprabhu feels. And the anxiety that Mother Yashoda feels. The anxiety that the Brijbasis feel in separation from Krishna. All right, any questions?